what we'd like to do here is we're going to answer the questions that we got and that were submitted via email. And then what we're going to do is we're going to come and answer all your questions here. There's still a lot of you on. And so, like I've said before, if you want to send in a message in the chat, you can do private because it's only you and us that are seeing it. We will do all of these anonymously. We are not going to share names. So you can ask whatever you want. We already have questions here. I will say this as well. They came in a lot. If we miss it and we're getting towards the end and you didn't hear your question, please just retype it. You know, it's not like we're trying to forget you. We're going to stay on until every question is answered to the best of our ability within a workshop situation. We may get to the point where if somebody's asking something, we may say, hey, please reach out to us for coaching, because what you're dealing with is very, very specific to your situation. We want to be able to assist you and help you. This just isn't the venue to be doing that. So we're going to start with the questions. You can start asking your questions on the webcast. Again, if you want to just do it private, that is awesome. We'll get it there. And we're going to stay on till every question is answered. So let's get started.
I just want to say one more thing. If some of you have to go, because we've already been on for about an hour, a little bit over an hour, the questions are all going to be included as part of the replay. So if you've submitted a question, you're like, oh, I really want to hear the answer, don't feel, because we know for some of you, it's almost 11 o'clock there on the East Coast. Don't feel like you have to stay up. You'll get the answers on the replay. Mm-hmm. So the first question was, how do you get your husband, and I'm just going to add wife, to see that total transparency is required after betrayal? Before the betrayal, I had every login and password connected to my husband. We had a level of trust where I was the one to set up anything that required a username and password. After the betrayal, my husband changed everything and will not give me the info. He says he no longer has anything to hide and wants to work on our marriage. This just further makes me not trust him. Well, he's given you two different pieces there. You know, when he won't give you access, and says he wants to work on the marriage, that's contradictory information. And, you know, if I had both of you on a coaching call right now, my question would be, what is it about holding on to the passwords that he's not comfortable with? Because transparency was a part of your marriage. And typically, it's been my experience that if somebody doesn't want to give up the passwords, there is something going on. And so I do think, you know, when you make the comment, this just further makes me not trust him, I completely understand that. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, and Tony and I have talked about this for years on the One Extraordinary Marriage show. There shouldn't be secrets between a husband and a wife, right? And when you put the lockdown on your passwords, when you put the lockdown on your phone, when you do all of these kinds of things, it just raises that little bit of doubt in your spouse's head. And if you've already had breaches of trust, that doubt is not congruent with the phrase, I want to work on the marriage. And so this would be one of those things. I don't know if this couple has already sought out coaching, but in order to understand total transparency, he may need to hear it from a third party, right? It could be one of those things where, you know, and this happens a lot, and I'm not going to say this is a wife nagging a husband or a husband nagging a wife, because it goes both ways. He may just be tired of hearing it from her. You know, it's like often, I mean, I see it in our own marriage where I say something to Tony and, you know, he's like, okay, yeah, whatever. And he goes on about his day. And then, you know, like 2 weeks later, he'll be like, yeah, my buddy had this great idea. And I'm thinking, I said that 2 weeks ago, but okay, it sounds better coming from you.
Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's being able to say, it comes to this emotional transparency and the emotional intimacy and really being able to open this part of it out and just going, okay, I'm just not following you. Because again, I think what Lisa is saying here is that it's contradictory. It's like, hey, we're good, but I'm not going to give you all that. So I have a feeling if, you know, your spouse is doing that, you know, I think he or she would need a little bit of somebody to say, hey, come on, what's going on? Like, why are you doing this to your spouse?
So the next question, it says, my question, he cheated, several trust issues and lies, as well as discovered texts, desperately begging to see her and get back together. When I discovered the affair, I went to her house after talking online. Her kids answered the door. I told them I needed to talk to their mom. I was his wife. Apparently, they were unaware he was married. Anyway, I said I needed as much or more attention as he was giving her. Text, videos, love notes, etc. And for him to unlock his phone. Not to snoop, to help rebuild my trust. He cleaned up his phone of all pictures, yet still keeps a lock code on it. He has become more attentive. We are not intimate because I don't feel that connection yet. More helpful, more hugs and kisses, has started doing our time or date night or whatever you want to call it. My question is, am I being unreasonable pushing for those texts and unlocking the phone to help me rebuild trust and that intimate connection? I've told him I do not consider myself married and we no longer have an anniversary. Hmm. He keeps saying he wants to keep trying, and I just need to see that he's trying in ways that I don't understand. Okay, so there are a few layers to this one, and I'm going to try and attack them in kind of an order. So that we're not getting all confused here. The first thing that I would say to you is you are still married. So every time that you tell him that you don't consider yourself married, you're choosing to put up a roadblock to both of you working on your marriage. You know, what we say out loud, what we say in our head, I've seen it happen so often, not only in our marriage, but in marriages around the world. What you say comes to truth. People mm-hmm. start acting along that. So right now you are still married. And if you want the marriage to work, stop telling him that you're not still married. What I would say as far as, you know, when he says you just need to see that he's trying in ways that you don't understand, I would ask him to, you know, what are you doing? Because it's true. Sometimes people are putting forth effort, and because it's not what we expect, we don't see it. You know, I don't know how many times I've said to Tony, I don't have ESP. If you want me to know something, just tell me. And vice versa, right? Because Tony does not have ESP. Every once in a while, we're on the same page. It's rather exciting. But for the most part, if he's got something going on, just tell me what you've got going on so I don't have to guess. So I'm sensing from this email that there is a communication piece that this couple is still struggling with. As far as the phone with the text messages and the lock code, we've addressed the lock code. I think that we pretty much hit that pretty hard on the last one. I do think that spouses should have all passwords. I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, Tony and I do. We've got, and partly because I can't remember a password to save my life. But above and beyond that, I've got no secrets. Tony wants to get on my phone, get on my phone. Tony wants to get on my email, get on my email, get on my Facebook. I've got nothing to hide. That's the kind of transparency that each and every one of you needs to have in your marriage. As for the texts, to see them, I don't necessarily know what that's going to do for you. You already know that the affair happened. You already know what you know. So reading it again, for the most part, will only serve to kind of stoke that fire. Having him delete them, absolutely.
Yeah.
Reading them, not necessarily something that you need to see. Okay, so this one says, trust issues with us have existed a long time. Our lies. Me, hiding purchases. Him, pornography addiction. Both recovered addicts. But we also try to keep each other accountable so it doesn't happen again. This is our question. What is the balance between trusting and having accountability? For example, for the first few years, I would check up on him and the computer use. And in those first few years, I would find, as I did the first time, pornography use. Then as time went on and I never found anything and he would tell me if he was tempted, etc., I stopped checking on it, trusting him. Every now and then I go to look and stop myself, feeling like if I really trusted him, then I wouldn't be doing this. And I do trust him. But what if he messes up? Or for me, we don't trust me with our money. So he has all the cards and money, but always gives me what I need, or when I want something, he, you know, gives me the card, you know, or gets it. So no worries. And it's not like there's financial abuse or anything, but he knows the budget and does everything for us financially. So this is a huge burden on him. And to build trust, don't I need to take some responsibility back to prove myself instead of a constant, we can't trust you with our money? Yet I understand the system we set up because it helps me to be accountable, but we just can't seem to find the balance between trust and accountability.
Great question.
So the first part of this I want to address is the whole financial issue where this this writer says, we don't trust me with our money. In the past, that was a breach of trust. Absolutely. But this is one of those negative records that is playing in both of your heads. And so what happens is you don't give yourself an opportunity to create the positive around that. So I would challenge both of you to rewrite that story, right? Because that's what that is. That's a story that's playing in both of your heads. And you know, the old story has to lead to new behavior. If you weren't trustworthy about the money in the past, what steps are you going to take to demonstrate that in the future? And do I think that you should have some financial responsibility so that you can start earning that trust and changing that message? Absolutely. And I don't know what that is for you in your marriage. That would be something for the two of you to sit down and talk about. You know, what are those baby steps? Again, goes back to the baby steps. What are those baby steps that you can do where, it's like what's that expression? Like if you give somebody a yard, they'll take a mile, you're kind of like letting out the leash a little bit to see, we do it with our kids, right? Like we give them a little bit to see how far they're going to go. And if they are responsible, then we give them a little bit more freedom.
Right.
Same thing is true with us as adults. You know, if there have been breaches of trust, like you said here, in the first part, she mentioned her husband pornography use. Right. And every once in a while, she feels the need to check. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't either. I think, hey, you know what? It's you check it and you move on. He tells you and you move on. It's I think that is a curiosity at times. And you know what? If you're looking at your computer and even in your history, you got kids around. I mean, I go through our history and Elisa does too. It's not like she's snooping and just trying to, find the bad. I mean, I would want her to call me out if I did that. Yeah, it's going to hurt. And yet if we've set up the agreement that she's my accountability partner in that, then she's going to know. I mean, there are programs out there that you can set up on your computers, on your laptops, on your mobile devices, where if you do look at certain pages, all throughout the day, it sends an email at the end of the day to your accountability partner. I mean, you've set that up for a reason because it's like, hey, I need to know. Eventually, though, I would assume that maybe you guys get to a point where you're going, you know what? We're good. I gotta just, the three P's, pause, pray. What was the third one again?
Proceed.
Proceed. Yeah. You're at the proceed part. Everything's good. We're going to just proceed. We are going to move forward. And like Elisa said, it's almost that visualization, that mantra, that change that we are going to go and look at the positive side of all of this instead of that negative. Strengthen me during this time of trial, instead of the get me out of this trial. When it comes to the money deal, yeah, I believe that both of you need to be in it. And how Elisa and I have done this even in our own marriage is that Elisa will put together the budget. I mean, it's pretty easy now. We've been doing it for so long. She puts it together. We look at it together. We divvy up what money goes in what envelope and what accounts, and we're done. We both have access to the accounts. We both can look at the accounts. We both have our debit cards to all the accounts. There it is. It's done. And she has full reign over all of our finances again. And that was a big breach for me back then when we were right in the middle of the recession.
This wife writes in and says, my husband had an affair with someone he had a working relationship with his business as a contract worker. He says that the affair is over and he wants to work on our marriage, but he still remains in contact with her for business because he says he doesn't want a quote lawsuit and that it's quote, it's a process. He hasn't spoken to a lawyer for advice, but he quote, just knows. The betrayal was discovered around 7 months ago and there should be no reason for any contact. I think it is just an excuse and I feel like I'm not important enough to him to remove all contact or that he doesn't really want to end the contact. I'm trying to work on our marriage, but I'm very cautious because an outsider remains in the picture. What do I do? as long as there's a third person in your marriage, it's very hard for the marriage to be the two of you. That being said, I do always find it suspicious when there has been an affair of any type, either emotional or physical, when the person maintains contact, because it's very hard to put those feelings to rest if that person is still available to you via text, via, you know, email, you have business relationships. I mean, that's where I said in that one slide, back when we were talking about reconstruction and work through, that there may be some things that you need to let go of. And it may be a friendship that's no good. It may be a job that no longer works for your marriage. In this case, it sounds like there's a friendship that he needs to let go of. And I want to be very clear with some of these things, like, you know, the rush that you get when you're spending money, the rush that you get from an emotional or a physical affair. I didn't mention this when we were going through, but those all have the same reaction in your brain, that rush, as taking drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been many, many times on coaching calls when I'm dealing with infidelity of any type where I will say to the spouse that's been hurt, the spouse that's been betrayed, you've got to view this other thing like a drug, you know? And that's what's causing this addiction to this other person, to this other behavior, to this other habit. And, you know, just like drug addicts have to get the drug out of their system completely, so do the rest of us that are dealing with breaches of trust. Whatever we did, we've got to get that out of our system. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where the two of you are going to be challenged as long as she is a factor in your marriage. And, it, you know, it might be one of those things where you and your husband get together with a coach and, you know, the three of you work through what are the boundaries. We had a couple more emails.
Mm-hmm. And if you have any more, please put them in onto the live chat. They're coming in. And so please, you know, if you want your question answered during the workshop here, put it in there. We're going to get to them. We're about to finish up the email section and we'll be getting to the ones that were submitted during the live chat.
Okay. This wife says, first she says, thanks for hosting this workshop and you are most welcome. Thank you for participating with us. She goes on to say, my husband has a sex addiction.
You just brought this up.
Okay. Well,
the addiction part.
Oh, the addiction part. Yeah. I'm like, no, I haven't brought up this email. He texts other women all the time, lies to get out of the house to meet up with these women and views pornography. All of this affects his mood, irritability, agitation, and motivation. It causes problems with sexual intimacy and his ability to get or maintain an erection. He doesn't spend time with me in the evenings because he's got to constantly be on his phone and hide what he's doing from me. I've tried talking to him over and over, but he doesn't think that he has an addiction and tells me that the problem is me. The last time I brought his sexual addiction up, he was agreeable to go to counseling, but only if the counseling focused on my issues and not his. Obviously, we never even made it to counseling. When I try to discuss any of this, he gets mad, storms off, and won't talk about it, then expects me to apologize. I don't know what to do anymore. How can I trust him when he lies to me over and over again? He'll go a few months without talking to different women, and then as soon as I feel I can trust him again, things start all over. When you're dealing, there's so much pain in this email.
Mm-hmm.
When you're dealing with an addiction of this caliber, of this enormity, your husband needs help. And, you know, something that you need to know about Tony and I is that we come from a pro-marriage standpoint. We do not use the word divorce. It's not, in, you know, in our vocabulary, in our marriage vocabulary. But I do realize that there are times when one spouse simply refuses to change, simply refuses to acknowledge that any of the challenges in the marriage are their doing. They don't take personal accountability for any of the behavior. And it sounds like that's what's going on here. I mean, obviously, he's hiding his behavior. He's leaving the house. He's, you know, texting other women. He's meeting up with them, which, okay, please see a doctor and make sure that you are safe, first and foremost, because I have had a number of clients who have received sexually transmitted diseases from their spouses who have had physical affairs. So just as a side note, please get tested to make sure that you are healthy. The pornography, all of these different facets, your husband needs help. And so do you, because this pain is, it's literally eating you away. I mean, I can hear it when you say he'll go a few months and then as soon as I feel I can trust him again, things start all over. This is not going to be one of those easily solvable things, especially if he doesn't feel like he has any responsibility here. And at that point in time, you know, when it continues like this, this is emotional abuse. He is not respecting the vows. He is not respecting you as his wife or as a person. That is emotional abuse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only time that Tony and I will say anything about divorce in a marriage is if there is abuse of any kind going on. Because you have to protect yourself. You can't be in a marriage where you are constantly at risk. And that's what's going on here.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, this, like Elisa said, sexual addiction is similar to those who are addicted to alcohol, to drugs. You have that same euphoric feeling that goes through you. And so it's up to that person to go and get help. You know, there's AA for alcoholics, there's narcotics, there's also a Sexaholic Anonymous. You can find that at www.sa.org. You know, there needs to be for you to be able to trust your spouse, for him or for her, that they are going through the steps necessary, that they are going to do something. So if it continues to happen and there is no change, yes, you can stay married for sure. I mean, and we've seen miracles happen where, you know, the one that's been addicted goes, it's an epiphany and it happens. Other times, it doesn't. And so at what point in time do you just go, listen, you got to make a change. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting me. You're hurting our family constantly.
Okay, so those were all the emails that were submitted ahead of time. So now we're going to start going through to the questions that were submitted through the workshop chat. So Tony's getting to the top of those.
So I'm going to start with the first one here. What is the best way to try to get an unwilling wife to participate in these? The Trust Me, Restore, Renew, and Rebuild Your Foundation, especially after I am the one who destroyed the marriage with pornography. So he's saying, hey, I'm the one who betrayed my spouse through pornography. How is it that I'm going to be able to get my spouse on board? What am I going to be able to do to say to my spouse, hey, honey, I've turned a new leaf. I'm done with this. I need you to join me. I need you to yoke up with me so we can start to grow together at the point where we are now.
This starts with you getting consistent with that action. You know, throughout this workshop, we've talked about what you can do. And, you know, in this case, your wife needs to see that you are taking positive steps, that you are coming to her with the transparency before she even has, you know, an opportunity to doubt. It's printing out your computer history. It's handing your phone over to her. It's, you know, putting filters on your computer and giving her the password to put the, you know, internet filters on so pornography can't come through. It's putting, you know, watchdogs on your phone so that you can't access it via your phone. Wherever you did it, it's coming to her first, maybe not asking her. She may not be ready. Because again, she's in that stage of just kind of, you know, I don't know when she found out about this, but, you know, for her, it sounds like it's still very raw. Like she's still in that shock and denial and pain and anger stage. She's not ready to move into the later stages, acceptance and upward turn and hope. So you've got to consistently demonstrate that you are changing your behavior, that this isn't just a one-time like, all right, honey, you caught me watching pornography. I'm giving this all up. Boom, I'm done. It's all about your actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I can totally relate to what you're going through because that's where Elisa and I were 11 years ago. That's where we were. And, you know, it was through doing what Elisa said so that, you know, and back then we didn't have what we have now in terms of access to it, but also ways to prevent us from and having accountability if we are searching certain things. So little steps every day. It's being, what's the word I want to use
consistent
here? Consistent. Yep. And deliberate about it. You know, hey, I mean, it may be even for you on the inside of your closet wall. I mean, you have a calendar up that you just go, this is my no viewing calendar. My no viewing pornography calendar. And every day that you don't view it, you put a line through it. And it's for you, but you know what? When your wife opens that and she sees that every morning, or maybe it's, you know, every so often, she may find it and be like, oh my gosh, you know, he's gone months. But it's what you do to change so that you continue to build that trust. And she has no reason to come back to you and go, oh, well, he did this, this, and this. Yeah, that was 3 years ago now. Yeah, you could say, you know. Let me look here. Okay, hold on. I'm just going through. Okay, hold on. Just you guys answered so many of these. Okay. Nope, right here.
Nope.
Nope.
That was just a comment.
Okay. Oh, Tony, can you elaborate on your massage therapist comment? Sure. You know, for me, and
I think I'm going to guess here that the question has more to do with the fact that you have a female massage therapist.
Okay.
That I'm guessing.
Okay. You
know, if this,
well, I'm gonna address both of this because okay. I think that's a great. Either way, it's cool. I'm gonna address why I go to her and
what guardrails are in place.
And what guardrails are in place so that folks understand. So why do I go see my massage therapist, Carolyn? She's an amazing gift from God, number one. She's been doing what she does for, close to, I think, 17 plus years. And she truly has a gift of healing through touch and also knowing what pains you have because of where she's touching on your body, the meridians, the female, the male side, all of this. She's also an awesome coach. So she's actually my coach where we're talking about pains and hurts that I've had in the past. My last session, we got into a very deep topic and I was just able in that moment to cry and allow myself to be real and let go of some of the hurt that I've had in my past where trust has been broken, not from Elisa, but from someone else. And so that's why I go to her. The guardrails we have set up, the way it's worked is that Elisa knows when I'm going to be there. Elisa knows who she is. So it's on the up and up. I mean, Carolyn has Elisa's phone number, so she'll text Elisa sometimes to say, hey, can you find out what's the best day for Tony next month? You know, so it's all on the up and up, and there's nothing fishy going on. Her husband is usually there, and he is a, like, 10-time arm wrestling champion. Like, the dude is gnarly buff, and I honestly,
he would squash Tony.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big dude. And Carolyn herself is a 5-time world champion arm wrestler as well, but we've set up guardrails and it's well known in this before we even got started, it's like, hey, I'm not coming here for any, you know, physical intimacy type stuff. I'm here because I consider myself a hobbyist athlete with my road cycling. And I like massage. I just needed to take it to a next level where she is honestly she knows everything about the body and why it's all knotted up and how she can bring out different things in me. Similar to what Elisa does with coaching with her clients. It's just a different way. Was that cool?
I think so.
All right. Okay, hold on. We're going to go down here. I am always the one that asks him to move on. He breaks my trust and hurts my feelings, but he never says sorry and has never asked me to move on.
I think that was actually in a response to all of those different... That was actually in a response, so that's not a question.
That's not a question.
That's not a question.
But I think that's an interesting one to bring...
Okay. I mean, we can talk... If you go back up so I can read it, I'll talk about it right there. Okay, stop moving. Okay, so, you know, a couple of things here. Again, you know, it's kind of that whole repeat offender status. You know, there are patterns of behavior. And when you start to see patterns of behavior repeating themselves, there needs to be an intervention to figure out why. Right? You know, a one time, like, that was just really a stupid idiot move. Okay.
Been there.
This has been going on for years. We keep getting caught in lies, very much like one of those other emails that I read and things like that. There's an underlying reason why that's happening. There's an underlying reason why he continues to break her trust and hurt her feelings, but never says sorry and never says let's move on. And you know, that demonstrates to me, just in the words that she's chosen, that there's no remorse for his behavior. He's not feeling a sense of accountability for his actions. And I don't know enough about this one in particular to be able to elaborate on that anymore. But you know, repeated behavior, guys, those are called habits. And habits need interventions to break them, to get, you know, create new habits.
And again, and we say this often on the One Extraordinary Marriage Show, you're not going to change your spouse. You can only change you. And there comes a point in time when you continue to change, you continue to do your thing, and they're not. And so at that, that's a tough place to be. We always hope that you can get into a counselor, a coach, a therapist, somewhere where you can work together, a pro-marriage one specifically, so that together you can start working through this and wading through it together. Okay, did that. Okay.
So this one says, I am really, really angry. I warned my husband, watched her go after him, an ex side chick, never a girlfriend. I knew. We've been friends since we were 5. I asked him on several occasions, is there something you want to tell me? My ego is just, ugh. Our Christian counselor is helping, but I'm still angry with her and him. She's a torchbearer and she has a husband. First of all, kudos to you that you are already working with a counselor.
Yep.
I know you're that's not an somebody. Easy thing, but getting out there and, you know, having a third person sometimes to take the focus off of either one of you is tremendously helpful, because it's not the two of you like sitting across the table, you know, hurling accusations at each other. It's a coach sitting there with you guys going, okay, well, let's talk about this issue and let's peel back the layers of this onion. And Tony wants to say something.
As a bonus, when you guys signed up for the workshop, we gave you the contract of reconciliation. And that is like a 7-page question and answer for the two of you to go through, where you, and in this situation where you have a counselor, which is awesome, I would bring that in with you and tell them, say, hey, you know what, we're working through a lot of stuff here and I want to, and we want to go through this. Our marriage is important, but we need to set up a contract of reconciliation so that way we can start seeing what we're going to do so we can move forward. And on this thing, if you haven't taken the chance to look at it, you can see it in your membership area, print it out. You go through it together. And again, with a counselor there, even better, because they can maybe even ask other questions, open it up. And at the bottom of each page, you guys initial it.
And one thing to say with that, don't feel like you have to get through the whole thing in one sitting. You know, it kind of goes back to the fact that you guys didn't get here overnight. So solving it isn't going to happen in one session. And it can feel very overwhelming. I know because I wrote it. It can feel very overwhelming to go through all of the sections in one sitting. One email that I saw, and I want to get to this, said, after believing lies for many years with my spouse's addiction, how will I ever know when he is telling the truth or telling a lie?
I think one question has to be answered here, which isn't answered yet, is, has it ended? Like, has everything ended or is it still ongoing?
Right.
Because those are two different ways to answer this.
Well, and I also don't know from this what accountability, what guardrails have been put into place. Because if nothing has been established to change the behavior, then honestly, you're not going to know. Right? Because you guys are just doing the same old thing and you're expecting a different result. If the addiction has been not only addressed, but worked through, if there are guardrails in place, if there's accountability in place, then what I would say here is that, again, it's that consistent behavior, like with the gentleman that said, you know, how do I get my wife to listen to trust me or do these kinds of things? It's that consistent behavior. When you start to find out, and you're going to question, You know, the reality is you're going to question for a good amount of time as you're going through the beginning stages of healing. You know, when Tony first came to me and told me about the pornography, here's what happened. Immediately after, besides being stunned and shocked, I was leaving to go visit my parents like 2 days later, leaving him at home, right? At home with a computer. Okay, bad scenario. Because you know what happened? Immediately after, like 2 days after I'd been at my parents' house with our son, I get a phone call saying, I got to tell you something. Mm-hmm. And that something was, I looked at pornography. So again, we were right back to square one. I'm like, okay, here we go again. And so in the early stages, I questioned anytime he was on the computer. You better believe I was constantly checking the history, you know, like checking everything. And then over time, when I saw that things weren't going down that same path, when I saw that he'd put filters in, when I saw that, you know, he was consistently meeting with his accountability partner, when he was, you know, being involved in men's group, when he was doing these actions that demonstrated a change in behavior, I didn't have to question anymore. And that's really what comes to the heart of this question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let me get back over here. Is it ever okay for the betrayer to not do everything that the betrayed asked of him or her?
I would have to know what falls into that list of activities, because it sounds like it might be something very extreme, but I can't give you a definitive answer because I don't, you're obviously implying something very specific there, and without knowing it, I can't answer that question.
Okay. Is it normal to be angry when your spouse has changed? Total transparency. I have all codes, but I'm mad he's doing well. Is that normal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, we see this a lot of times when couples who have struggled, not necessarily over a breach of trust, but, you know, they've had the drift or whatever in the marriage, and one spouse has been like, let's go see a counselor. Like, we're not doing well. Let's go do this. And all of a sudden they're like, okay, I'm at the end of my rope, and now you've changed. And, you know, you're angry that now they've changed. That is normal, because in some respects you've been waiting for this for a really long time, and your brain is going, why didn't this happen before? Like, why did we have to get to this bad place to now have you change? So kudos to you that you have all the codes, that you have done this, that he is doing well. I mean, like, let's focus on the positive here. And again, these feelings of anger, this being mad, journal about it. Get those thoughts out of your head. There's something incredibly cathartic about taking whatever is swimming in your head and getting it out and putting it on paper, actually releasing it from the spinning wheel in your head.
Yeah, and we did a podcast on this. It's episode 268, Why Are You Acting Like This? And it's all about change. It's all about, you know, when your spouse is changing or you're changing and your spouse is looking at you or you're looking at them and going, what are you doing? And so I think you'll get a lot out of that show. Hold on. What are the most important things for the truster, the one who didn't make a bad choice, to do for the rebuilding trust process?
We're going to be getting into the whole process on rebuilding trust in the next set of videos that you guys are going to get into. So I'm going to save this one for those videos, because we're going to hit that pretty hard when we talk about the process of rebuilding trust.
Okay, here's the next one. I have done so many things to break his trust. Nothing terrible, but little things that have built up. I've told him I am going to change, or that I won't do it again, or that I won't let our marriage fall, but I feel like he has already checked out. How can I get him to know that I am for real this time, that I'm 110% committed to fixing this without him saying, same old song and dance, heard this before? We've said it many a time throughout the workshop. Your actions speak louder than words. Truth be told, folks, you can talk all you want and do nothing. And the same old song, same old dance. When you start showing, when you start doing, when you start making the change, and they go, why are you acting like this? that's when you know your spouse sees that there is change coming along. Because we've all been there before. Oh, I won't do that again. Look at me. I can raise my hand. Elisa, I'm not going to look at pornography. 2-3 days later, I can't remember. I think she's right. I think it was 2 days later. I'm looking at it again and I'm calling her. My actions had to speak louder than my words. And so when I decided, when I said no more, it's about me. And you have to do this for yourself. It's about me. I have to change. I'm going to make those little steps. That's when Elisa started to go, okay, I see you're not looking at pornography anymore. It's been a month. It's been 6 months. It's been a year. It's been 5 years. It's been 7. It's been 10. See how that happens? But if I broke it again and I said, oh, I wouldn't do it again, and then I do it again, and that's where you're on that roller coaster, and it happens. And we've been there before as well. Okay. What's your opinion on having to change cell phone numbers? If other person's number is blocked, the lock code is shared, and access to phone records is given to spouse. Hey, you know what? This is me. And Elisa can share her side. This is me. If you need to change the cell phone number because that's going to give you comfort and your spouse comfort, do it. In my opinion, this is about the covenant between you and your spouse. I'm not worried about what that other person's feelings are. I'm not worried about what that other person's going to think. I don't care. You know, they came in, they caused the breach of trust. At this point in time, if you guys are really into it, you're rebuilding, if this gives you guys that sense of we are going to honor our covenant, and one way that we're going to be able to do this is that we're going to change the cell phone number, then we're doing it. And go for it.
Amen.
Amen to that. Thank you. What are the most important things for the truster? No, we read that one. Okay. If a spouse is refusing responsibility for causing marriage problems, is there a bigger mental issue? Like the example given about the sexaholic you gave in the email.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. I'm not a doctor. Tony and I do not make any diagnoses. We don't. That's that you actually need to seek
medical
attention for. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, there can be, because there are, you know, there are certain personality types as far as, you know, narcissistic personalities and whatnot, who have very big difficulty in acknowledging and taking accountability for their responsibility. I don't know enough about this situation, nor would I be in a position to make a diagnosis. That would be something that I would refer to a medical professional. So this one says, husband did and has been transparent with our children. We are working towards a new normal, but they are really looking at me. Hold on, I can't remember. Galatians 6:1 is what God gave me the day I found out, but I so don't want to be obedient to God right now. I struggle with this pain, but I struggle with not being obedient to the promptings of the Holy Spirit. It was a decision. I agree with that. But why doesn't he have a reason for the decision? What does I don't know mean? It was stupid, illogical, irrational. So why did you do it? Well, I actually don't know the answer to why he did it. So I am going to use I don't know. In his case, you know, it may be a matter of looking at the six reasons why trust is broken, by looking at that checklist to say, okay, I know you've struggled with coming up with an answer. Can you please look at these and tell me which one of these was a factor in you making this, you know, as you refer to, you know, this decision, you know, stupid, illogical, irrational decision. You know, if you give him a tool, maybe that makes it easier for him to be able to put words to it. Because sometimes, you know, when we're swimming in our own muck in our head, it's hard to figure out what a reason is. You know, the second thing about this particular email, message, hold on, stop moving it, is that it is hard to be obedient to the promptings of the Holy Spirit, because guess what? We're inherently selfish human beings, right? That's our nature. And when we've been hurt, the selfishness factor rises. I don't even know what the factor rises by. I was going to say a factor of 10, but it's probably a factor of 100. And so, you know, I would go back to the three P's pause, pray, and proceed. Continue to seek God's guidance here. Continue, even when you don't want to, I bet you would agree with me that the promptings of the Holy Spirit have never led you wrong. Okay? Because, you know, when we listen and when we do what we're told, it's amazing how much smoother and how much more things fall into place and how much more peace can come. Even in the midst of a horrible storm like this, there can be peace.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't know why. And I think that is, you know, like Elisa said, it's looking at that those six reasons and saying, hey, you know, let's look at these together. You have six reasons why this possibly could happen, and that may be able to give you clarity, because sometimes we don't, a reason of I don't know is because there's nothing there in front of me to look at. I don't know. But with those six reasons why, you can both sit down and go, wow, I was bored. You know, I felt neglected over the years. You know, these are things that he or she may be able to say. And again, because you're caught and you don't know what to say, and you feel frustrated, and by looking at those again, that helps out. That is it. If anybody else has any others, we want to make sure we get you before we get off. Before we close, I want to say that you can contact us at oneextraordinarymarriage.com. I will say there you can find all of our articles. You can find the podcast. If you're new here and you're like, whoa, Tony and Lisa, I didn't know you had a podcast. We've been podcasting for 5+ years. We share our story each and every week. And sometimes you're going to hear us, you know, work through just this issue and how we're dealing with it in our own marriage. And, you know, you're going to see us progress through the years. Also, if you're looking for more resources, you can go to oneextraordinarymarriage.com/get-help. And lastly, if you want an initial strategic coaching session, you can go to oneextraordinarymarriage.com/strategic session. Use the code TRUSTME. You'll get it for $97 for that first session. And as we close out, the one thing I want you to be taking away from this tonight, what is my biggest takeaway?
And actually, I'd love for you guys, if you wouldn't mind, in the private chat to share that with us.
Or share with everybody, because, you know, what did you get from this? What was the eye-opener for you? What, like I said at the top of the workshop, what is that golden nugget that you got that you can go, okay, I can start my journey here? Or we've been on this journey and the path has been sort of straight, and now I'm seeing it that it's starting to curve a little bit. You know, there's some change that's going to start happening here. What is that golden nugget that you got, that takeaway that you can go, okay, I'm going to start this? And if you want to answer, that would be awesome. As we close out, we want to thank each and every one of you who has joined us, who has picked up Trust Me, Restore, Renew, and Rebuild Your Foundation. We believe that trust is vital, and it's through doing those baby steps, taking the time, looking at everything that we've discussed so that you can grow closer together. You know, and that includes your emotional intimacy, that includes your spiritual intimacy, your physical intimacy. Each one of those begin to come together as you grow in your trust. One person said the six reasons. Yes, thank you.
I want to thank each and every one of you for spending all of this time with us. I know that there are a lot of other things that you could be doing with your time, and the fact that you chose today to invest in your marriage, that you chose to get more education for the two of you to work through an area that really, when we talk to couples around the world, there are two things that they say they want to work on in the next 6 months. Number one is communication. Number two is trust. each and every one of you that chose to get involved with this program, that chose Trust Me, Restore, Renew, and Rebuild Your Foundation, you've made an investment to tackle that number two area that most couples want to improve. And so I just want to commend you. I want you to keep an eye out for the videos that are going to come next week. They're going to be chock full of information, just like this one was, on those next three sections. And we just want to say thank you for spending this time with us.
Yeah. And one other person chimed in and said that there's a process to eventually fully trust each other again, that there's hope. Yeah. You know, if we both want to reestablish trust, we both have to work to do in rebuilding trust. Correct. Mm-hmm. You know, there both of us. And one thing is that you both may be at different places on that roller coaster too. And it's understanding that as well. You know, going back to that section of the roller coaster, where are you? Where's your spouse? So very well said. You guys, thank you. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the workshop. Trust Me, Restore, Renew, and Rebuild Your Foundation. We love you guys. If we can be of any help to you guys in the future, please don't hesitate to reach out, oneextraordinarymarriage.com. If you want a strategic coaching session with Elisa, again, that's oneextraordinarymarriage.com/strategic session. Use the code TRUSTME. We love you guys. Have a fantastic week.